Expert Instruction, the Teach by Design podcast, where we dive deeper into the research surrounding student behavior by talking with the people implementing these practices, where they work, and with the students they support. I'm Megan Cave.
I'm Danielle Triplett.
We did it. We made it. We've gone all the way through the Tier 1 section of the TFI this year. And woohoo. It's been such a good journey through all of the elements of the framework. And we hope that all of you have learned a lot along the way with us. Today, we're going to talk all about item 1.15, the annual evaluation. It's the last item on that Tier 1 section of the TFI.
Yes, we did it. And joining us in our conversation today are three incredibly smart women who have been involved in PBIS implementation collectively for decades. They had so much insight to share on the topic. They've seen it all, including the drift that naturally happens in schools as leaders and initiatives come and go over time, and they have sustained their efforts to create positive, proactive school environments over the long term.
They sure have. Yes. So let's get into who these people are.
Yeah.
Diane LeMaster is one of the first people that I got to know when I started working here in 2004. She's been around since the early days of SWIS, and I think she said in the year 2000, and she brings with her so much experience as a special education teacher, a behavior interventionist, and a district coach. Right now, she works for the Midwest PBIS Network and for schools throughout the state of Illinois.
Yeah, and then we also have two colleagues of mine that I've known for years as well. Mm-hmm. First off was Michelle Cook. She served as a special educator, PE teacher, PBIS coach, building principal, and executive director of student support services in the Gresham Barlow School District. And now she's working part-time to support MTSS implementation in that district. She was my mentor when I started as a PBIS coach in that same district, and I'm super grateful to Michelle's leadership and support to me, and I just really loved reconnecting with her.
Yeah.
I also got to reconnect with Kim Barker. She's a longtime colleague of mine, also from the Gresham Barlow School District. Mm-hmm. Now she's serving as principal at Deep Creek Damascus K-8 School, and it was really great to hear her perspective as a building administrator. It really enriched the conversation and added some concrete examples of what it looks like to share data and action plan with all staff in her school.
That's right. We love talking to all three of them. And so many of their lessons learned complemented each other and gave Danielle and I new ideas and ways of thinking about some of these things. We hope that you take away some useful nuggets of wisdom and your own ideas from the conversation too. So let's get into it.
Yay, let's do it.
Well, hi, everybody. Good afternoon to all of you. Thanks so much for being here with us.
Great to be here.
I'm Megan, Danielle,
Kim, and Michelle.
Good to see you guys.
Hello. Yeah, thanks so much. Yeah. So today we invited you guys on for a very specific reason. We're continuing on. This is our penultimate episode.
Ooh,
of
good work.
Thanks. I've been working on my vocabulary of our season, and it brings us to the final item on our TFI journey this year. We've been taking a year-long look at each of the items on the TFI, and we've come to the annual evaluation. And so I think what we wanted to have you guys on here to talk about is really how data serve us and our larger school-wide community, and why it's important to share those data in regular ways. The TFI tells us annually, but I mean, I don't think it's a terrible time anytime to share those data. So maybe, Diane, can you start us off? Maybe tell us, why is it so important to share our fidelity data, our outcome data like referrals and whatnot with our larger school-wide community?
Absolutely. I just always think about how important it is that we share data continually, especially starting with our staff and our buildings. It's important not only that they understand what PBIS is and what this work is all about and why it's important, as well as how do I implement these supports, but we want this to sustain and to build capacity within the buildings, and regular sharing of data will do that. It helps with buy-in and sustainability. Mm-hmm. They can see the fruits of their efforts and mm-hmm. see how things are progressing along. We're asking them to implement these supports. So this is showing, hey, here are the successes. Here are our kids are doing. So it's just critical that that's done at least monthly.
Yeah, great. Kim, I know you're at the building level now as a building administrator. Would you tell us your perspective on this question?
I think it echoes a lot of what Diane said. I think one thing about PBIS in our building is that it touches so many aspects of a building, from classified staff, administrators, bus drivers, that that's such a big pool of people that it's really important to make sure that everybody's staying in the loop with what's going on and reviewing the system. And then I think just for our community in general, having that transparency about our systems, it should not be a secret to anyone, from anyone, about what's going on in a school, about developing good, positive behaviors, how we recognize kids, any of those things. So I think that's a really important piece. And then the last piece is just like always reviewing data is great for continuous improvement. We have to keep looking at it, keep moving forward with it, changing, creating action plans based on what we're seeing.
The other part that I think something that's been rattling around in my brain related to data is the way that it can serve as a memory or a historic record of something. We've been talking a little bit in various episodes about the turnover that's happening in schools, and that it's rare to have a school full of people who have been there from the beginning. And so data can actually, I don't know, they can benefit us in that way, that we can actually look back and see what was going on even at a time that we weren't physically in the building. So I don't know. I wanted to check in with you guys and see like what your experience is with that. How have you seen data serve as that historical reference, as that memory? I mean, we were just talking about how long each of you has been around the block here in this field of education, and in particular working with PBIS. So maybe you can share a little bit about how long you've been doing it, and then what's your experience with data serving as that historical marker, particularly when there's a lot of turnover in a school?
Maybe we can start with Michelle. I know she's been in Gresham Barlow for quite a while and in a variety of roles across that.
Yeah. I think the turnover has been definitely a huge variable, not just with building leaders, but also with staff. And going back and looking at what was implemented before, there are some schools that are able to go back and look, you know, 6-7 years pre-pandemic. And, you know, in some cases we have data that's, you know, 12-13 years to really start to see how much has changed. And we all know that without the sustained practices of teams continually meeting, continually to refine, you get that drift. Mm-hmm. And I think our district, you know, we're not special, we experience the drift as well. And so as we reopen schools, we really did a deeper kickoff again, still not as much as we want, but schools are coming together. They're, you know, working through the TFI to see like, what does this all mean? Back to what Diane said, like, what really is PBIS again? What did we think it was? You know, so we're kind of redefining, reestablishing, and we're seeing in places where people have really done that work, we're really seeing, we're starting to see, you know, the implementation levels get back up into the 60s and 70s again, percent, you know, but it definitely takes time, and it can be helpful to see it if teams know what they're looking at. And so we're also seeing the importance of providing professional development about what is data is available. What does this mean? How do you use it to actually guide systems development?
I love that. You know, Michelle, that really reminds me, as we were all coming out of the pandemic, I think especially in Oregon, when our schools were closed longer than in many parts of the country. But, you know, sometimes when I would talk to educators that were kind of opening back up, and they were looking historically at those practices and kind of saying, is what we did before going back to normal? Like, was that normal? Do we have to keep doing what we did? Like, even things like the dress code policy, I've seen schools say, gosh, we used to be more strict on this. Like, now let's move on to just celebrating the fact that kids are showing up and they're here. And it's less important if they are breaking the dress code of having a hat or a hood on. And let's just celebrate that they're engaged and they made it to school today. Right. So, I'm glad to see that movement and that like kind of questioning, just because we've done it forever doesn't mean that was the best thing.
I think we also are seeing that as we're looking at how are we implementing PBIS, are we implementing it with a more culture responsive lens to create that engagement you're talking about? So yes, Diane.
No, I was just going to say, I've just worked with so many schools that, they say our team was trained 10 years ago and all those people are gone.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so now here's what we have left. We give out these tickets and we have parties and that's pretty much it. And so
that's such a familiar story.
It is. So, okay, let's take a step back and we look to see, was any data collected? In a lot of instances when they've just done parties and tickets for several years, there was no data collected. And so then it's like really taking them back to kind of square one with a retraining or a reboost. And, you know, let's get the self-assessment survey. Let's get staff perception data. Let's get the tiered fidelity inventory going. Those are two great tools that are going to start to give us our roadmap to where we need to go and what we need to focus on. So, yeah, absolutely. It's kind of amazing.
Yes.
I think as a building administrator and coming into a building relatively recently, I think it's super important. And one thing I appreciate about PBIS is that it can be really systems-based. You know, there's processes for how we look at the data every time. There's processes for a consistent agenda every single time. So there's things that can continue on in a system, even when people change. And I think that that's important. And then just adding in things like the TFI is just another piece into that system that doesn't become so independent on individuals, but really more of a process if we keep and we do all of those pieces like we should.
Oh, systems. Definitely. You're speaking Danielle's language.
You bet.
I was just thinking though, so as you guys are talking, when you mentioned some of the turnover, Diane, like you were saying, there are schools that all the people that were on that team 10 years ago when it started, they're gone now. I'm wondering, do you ever have your teams look back at previous data and think about what's different about now than what might have been going on at the time? Are you able to give them that context to bridge that gap over the time period? Or how does that work if you've got a team full of people or a school full of people that weren't here back when data was being collected so strategically and systematically? How do you help them understand that, like, where you are now is a reflection of where you were then?
I think a good place that we usually start with is just kind of providing an overall tier one booster. And then as part of that booster, because none of those folks generally that we've worked with have even been trained. Mm-hmm. So again, they weren't trained. So they just give out tickets and they plan celebrations and that's great, but they need that training. So that might look in the way of a full training, a booster. And then as part of that, starting to, as we go through the booster, they're completing all of the components of the tiered fidelity inventory. Team composition, how would we rate ourselves at this point in time? Team operating procedures, and they need to learn about all of that. Your expectations, your teaching system, your discipline system. So as they're learning about all that, they're also completing that TFI. We certainly go back in and check to see if any data has been done. Oftentimes, that's the piece that just is just absent, is missing. None of those surveys, none of that data has been collected, has been entered. They don't really have any record of it. So a lot of times it's you're kind of starting from square one. If there is, though, certainly we bring that out as well. And, you know, what was happening in that school at that time? Let's look at that data. Let's look at that self-assessment survey data that we took in 2014 or that, you know, TFI yeah, data anything. Or whatever.
What do you have?
Right.
Yeah. You got a team implementation exactly. checklist? Ooh, you got to
yes. Or a BOQ?
Yeah.
Exactly.
How about a set? Anybody got a set?
I've done the set. Yeah.
I love sets.
Michelle, so anything.
But yeah, we pull it all out.
Michelle, I'm thinking of you because I know when we chatted and kind of reconnected a couple weeks ago, you were saying similar things that you're off, you know, while PBIS has been in place in a long time in that district, you kind of go back to square one. You want to speak more to that?
Yeah, no, definitely. I think we have the same phenomenon that Diane was explaining, where you've got people on teams that are aware of some of the pieces and they've kept them running, but they don't necessarily understand why, or they have opportunities to refine implementation to make it work better. But they need that sort of guidance of how do I make changes and what changes do we make? Mm-hmm. So we're trying to help them understand the depth and the details in the TFI, where that's really your roadmap. And if you can understand what's in there and just start building systematically, you can rebuild systems. But just the concept of using systems health assessments to guide school work in general, I think is still not something that's just common practice across all different kinds of schools and locations. I think PBIS has been one of the most effective in terms of getting that systems health assessment in place so that it can guide the work. But we find that it's still new to think about it. And sometimes people are like, why do we have to do this? And it's like, but it's so important, you know, because it helps you know what to shift and where to make your adjustments to get the leverage that you're looking for.
Yeah.
So definitely the same experience.
Yeah. You're just talking about good coaching that's necessary. Mm-hmm. And that's another theme that keeps coming back for us as we talk to educators across the country, is just the value of data, but also the value of coaching teams and people through those data, because we understand it. We look at it all the time. Diane's in assessment every day, but not everybody else is. And so something that's fluent to us is not necessarily fluent to others. And so helping them to understand, like you were saying, Rochelle, that why you would even collect or monitor these data is so crucial.
So how do we get from there? Like you're doing some of these assessments with teams. What does that look like, moving it and sharing that data with your staff? And how, you know, now you've got the team maybe coming along and kind of understanding the rationale for doing that. But what's worked, maybe what even hasn't worked? Like the TFI says we should share it annually. We'd love it shared more often, but we want to kind of hear what's actually in place in the settings that you work in and how you've seen those data shared. Like what's that actually look like in buildings these days? I'm going to start. Let's start with Kim. She's in a building. Let's see.
So I think as a K-8, it's provided us a good opportunity about how to share data that's relevant to multiple grades and how to look at that and not just want to focus on just our part, but to look at a bigger picture. Mm-hmm. One of the ways is making sure, like when you have your team set up, that you have representation.
Yes.
I think is really important, and getting a lot of constituents on the team. So if you have multiple grade levels, you have them from those grade bands, you have the classified staff, you have the counselor, you have special education, because that's a lot of times data moves, not just in a meeting, but it moves between people and conversations. Mm-hmm. And so having people sit there is also important so that they can go back and share with peers as well. But also just providing, I think sometimes it's really important to look at the, not just the here's what it is, the data, but also asking that question about what is it telling us?
What does it mean?
What questions do we have? Because if we just present it, but we don't try to make an effort to see how other people are taking it in, sometimes it doesn't go anywhere. And so it's really more of like presenting it, but then asking some questions of the people that are looking at it to make sure that everybody's kind of seeing the same picture.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's such a good point. I was just doing a lot of reading for the article over on Teach by Design for this month of May. We're exploring what it means to tell a data story, to do some data storytelling. And the research says that there are three components. There's a narrative, there's data, and there's visuals. And you can have two of those three, but you actually create a story that affects change when you use all three. So that's what you're talking about too, is like you've got these data, you're presenting them in the visual, but you need to tell people what it means sometimes, or at least highlight it for them in a way that's like, do you notice this? Because we noticed that. Mm-hmm. And here's why we did what we did because of it, you know, telling the story and bringing people along in your journey. Yeah.
And your audience makes a difference as well. You know, what you're sharing with your staff may not be necessarily data you're going to share with your school board.
Say more about that.
You know, and so with staff, you know, definitely TFI data, behavioral data, that just ongoing behavioral data that's collected every day. And not only just the data, but based on this data, here are decisions that are being made on that data. And here are the action plans, because oftentimes your staff are going to be part of that plan. So they need to know what the story is. So it's more than just showing the graphs and the data, but like you said, Megan, a story. And here's the decisions made. Here's our action items. Here's our action plan. That's more down at that school level. The self-assessment survey, when we ask them to get on and take that staff perception data, we need to share that with them. They need to see, this is what we feel as a staff. Here's how our feelings are of implementation status. But versus the Board of Education, where I would have to do board reports, and they kind of wanted a more global type of, you know, how are elementary schools progressing? Mm-hmm. You know, what does the triangle look like for our elementaries? What does it look like for our junior highs, our high schools? So they kind of want to see more of that in terms of percentages. And in my superintendent, I met with him quarterly. He wanted to look at behavioral data of every school. And he really wanted to, he was so interested in that very first graph, which is that average referrals per day per month, yeah. which is that nice comparison. And he was very interested in that. And so it just kind of depends on, you know, staff should be very ongoing monthly. I met with superintendent quarterly, did twice a year board reports. So it's just, it depends, I think, on your audience, the type of data, how you're going to share it, what that's going to look like.
Mm-hmm. I love that you shared that graph enough times where he was like, I want to see that one all the time.
Yeah,
I know. Really? He's on board. I love it.
He had a data binder.
Our former director, he tells a story about when he first, Dr. Rob Horner, he tells a story about when he was first working with a school out in Fern Ridge, and he went to a team meeting and he brought a graph that he created on his own, and they didn't really pay it any mind. And then he showed up to the next meeting and he had the same graph, new data,
but like data from their school though.
Yeah. From their school. And then they were like, yeah, okay. So, oh, you're serious. You're going to keep bringing that thing. And then the next time he showed up and he didn't have it, and they asked him where the data were.
That's great.
The data. You know? So I think if you can make it a regular part of how you do business and the way that you communicate with the different audiences that you have, people start to expect it and they can start to build those connections and patterns, I think, on their own.
I was thinking about a particular school that really has just taken off with PBIS the last 3 years. And they've set they set a very specific goal to target a very specific group of students. And they were really leveraging the students to leveraging the systems to create a different experience for one of their student focus groups. They've been using the data with their team and to share with staff to show the implementation progress that they've made. And so I was thinking about that as an example at the building level of how to create and encourage staff, like, hey, your efforts are showing up, look at we're implementing more, and look, we're also, then you compare that to our referral data, and and they'd made some changes in that too. Mm-hmm. And so they were able to show implementation going up and referrals coming down, which that's is sort so of good. That sweet spot to get to. It was encouraging to see that when a team is really, you know, and we're getting there, but we're going to see more of that. But there's one in particular that like took off with that. And it was like, hey, nice job.
Yeah, we love highlighting stories like that.
That's great. It's just making me think that of why it's so important to share these data more than just once during the year. The TFI tells us to share it once, like to have an annual evaluation. But to me, if you can do it in smaller ways, like you can have like a big report that you put together, like at the end of the year, here's what we did, here are the things that happened, here's everything, a summary of it all. That's great. That would be great. But I think that there are smaller ways to share data more regularly with people so that they can see those results in real time. So you don't have to wait months to know whether this focus group is working or not. You actually get that real-time results that can then encourage and build momentum and keep people going, okay, it seems to be working right now. I'm willing to stick it out a little bit longer, you know, because it works.
What this is making me think of is, Michelle, when you were mentoring me a few years back, one of the things just a couple, but pre-pandemic. But I think, you know, one of the things that really stuck out for me was that PBIS is really about the adults doing things with consistency, and showing data is just another example of that. Like if we just do it randomly and, you know, it's not a big deal, but it's kind of like your Rob Horner example of it's just every month. Well, Rob, where's the data?
Where is it? You get used to that,
normalize it and it becomes a system. Mm-hmm. So kind of made a connection there.
How do you, I know that, so we've got, Kim, you're at the school level, Michelle, you're at the district level, and Diane, you've been at the region. And so I'm kind of curious for the folks that are at that higher, like multi-school level, how do you use a school's annual evaluation, whatever it is, report, at that level? Do you just use it for your own district about like action planning? I've heard of some people getting recognition based on some of their efforts related to PBIS. How does that affect, how does a school's annual evaluation impact a district or a regional evaluation related to PBIS? What are the outcomes that you all are looking for?
Well, at the district level, we have a team of coaches that are part of an MTSS team, and specifically we work together to support schools with PBIS. So when we're looking at the data, we're looking particularly at the equity reports as well. We're looking at, we needed to redo our handbook. We are looking at how aligned are we with collecting referral information. So we're kind of doing a whole lot of recalibration so that we have cleaner, more aligned data. So a lot of the information that we're looking at is informing us for professional development. Where do we need to make shifts across the district to start to clean things up and get things aligned? Again, this is a lot of that post-pandemic cleanup paired with drift over time. Yep. And so it's really helping us with, as we can get more time with teams to be able to plan out professional development, we're starting to expand our professional development. We're going to start implementing more consistent, how do teams use SWIS? Because we've learned that we've assumed that there is some knowledge in place that there's not. Mm-hmm. And so we're like, okay, we need to back up a lot of that back to the basics. Yep. And so, you know, even this spring, it was like, let's go back to PBIS 101. What are those pieces? What does it need to look like? And we're finding that some schools haven't updated their matrix since, you know, 2006.
Yeah.
It's like lots changed since then. Time to, you know, so it's just that I feel super fortunate that we have a team and that our district has maintained time and coaching to be able to help schools, because it makes such a difference as a building leader when you've got systems or not, and whether you're in a reactive state or whether you can get that to that proactive place, which really, you know, gives you more time for instructional leadership.
Gosh, I love that. I love that. Yeah. I feel like that is it, Michelle, that we're just desperately trying to find a way to get out of this reactive state and into that proactive, what can we do to create the spaces that we want instead of reacting to the spaces that we have? Yeah. Oh my God, I'm making connections in my own brain. Yay. Thanks for the words there, friend. Diane, what are you doing? Follow that, Diane.
I don't know. That was pretty good. I like that little saying too. I'm going to write that down. You know, certainly at our level at Midwest, and we work with all of the schools and districts within our state and the Midwest region, we have coaches meetings. And so we'll meet with district coaches and then kind of just have them, they have a chance to interact with each other and just share with them suggestions and ideas and tools. And we, you know, when you're meeting with your teams, now that it's getting closer to the end of the year and they have meetings set up with their teams, what's that going to look like? You know, will you have data on the tables? Will you have the year-end report if you're SWIS users? That's an amazing report. Such a good comprehensive report with everything that's been entered into SWIS. Mm-hmm. How about your TFI, your self-assessment, climate surveys, ethnicity reports, all of those rich datas. And then from there, just really digging in and starting to develop a multi-tiered action plan for the new school year. What's that going to look like at tier one, at tier two, at tier three? So we do a lot of that at our level. We do a lot of that coaching with district coaches who then take that back to all of their buildings. As they meet with their building-based coaches, they take a lot of that information. So that's a way to kind of share. And a lot of that experience I have of when I was a district coach as well, sharing that now with district coaches, you know, in Midwest and across the across our state, to just then they take that back to their coaches.
Well, let's talk a little bit about, you know, beyond summarizing the effort over your last school year, we know that teams really want to naturally continue their progress as they're looking ahead to the coming school year. So we're curious, what are some ways you've seen teams leverage data to start action planning for that year ahead?
Yeah, Diane, you talked a little bit about that, but maybe Kim, what have you seen with your teams at the school level when you're putting together this summary of the year and you look toward the next year? How do you use it?
Yeah.
Well, at school improvement planning time right now. Right. And this is just one really important piece of data that we bring forward when we look at that.
Yes.
And one of our district initiatives is an inclusive culture and, you know, instructional alignment, and PBIS really fits with both of those. And so when we're looking at that and we're thinking of items and things that we might want to work on, the data says we should work on this, or someone just proposes we should work on this. We're usually using that as kind of a framework about how does our work fit with our school improvement plan, which fits with our district. And it really kind of aligns well together. And that's another piece, you know, when we talk about behavior and inclusion, you know, that's when we say who isn't being included or why are they not being included or feeling included, that PBIS data can be really powerful to look at that and start to make some decisions about what can we do to increase inclusion and decrease behaviors. Mm-hmm. So I think it's a really important piece in the school improvement planning process. And also, we kind of looked at it separately first. So we're meeting as a team. Actually, we're meeting on Wednesday as a team to talk about that school-wide and from different teams from across the middle school level to look at that and then be able to take that back and have some pieces that we can, you know, to decide the PBIS team's going to look at their data and draw some conclusions based on what they see. And then that's taken back to another set of data where another team may look at it in a bigger context. But it's definitely a good foundational starting point. When we talk about MTSS and multi-tiered systems of supports, PBIS always comes up a lot because it's that very core level of what are we doing to support every kid in the school at the most basic level with consistent expectations. And so making sure we keep coming back to that whole idea when we're like, well, we want to help everybody at the top. We also want to make sure we're setting a really good foundation when we're planning for things. And so we want to plan at all levels.
Mm-hmm. I keep hearing this theme of this, like, coming back to basics and those foundational principles that Dr. Horner and others kind of helped create. And while those are still in place, they've evolved and we're continuing to do things better. Michelle, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, and that's what we're seeing is that schools are, because it's a different context now, the needs of our kids have shifted. You know, our society and world is in a different place. And so an example is one school used the data and they identified that their African-American Black students they had disproportionality in their referrals. And when they did some empathy interviews, they're finding that there's a group that isn't feeling super connected. And so that team decided to identify that as a specific goal for their PBIS work in terms of, we want to use the system, strengthen the system, and see if we can have an impact for this subgroup. And that was the one I had mentioned earlier. Mm-hmm. And they layered it with other things. So like Kim had said, you know, inclusive culture in our district is a priority and evidence-based practices, you know, via MTSS and that instructional alignment. So kind of leveraging those and bringing them together. And they are seeing an impact and they are seeing improvements in the inclusive feel of their school. But again, it was that intentional building leader like Kim, seeing it all through the school improvement planning process, bringing it into alignment and using the data to help steer, because there's so many possible things to do. But, you know, back to the basics of what's the smallest change is going to have the biggest impact. How do we leverage? Because we aren't going to get more time. All the things that Kim talked about. So, I mean, great examples there.
I am sitting here listening to the three of you, and I'm thinking you are so experienced at this work, and the way that you talk about it, it's like cake. Like, it's so easy. You just know what, maybe not easy. You just familiar. Know you familiar and you know what needs to be done. And so you get to the work of doing it. And what makes me, we've also talked about how there are several folks out here listening. I don't know how many, but some of them maybe are kind of new and they don't know what to do. So they are in a very different place than you are. Mm-hmm. And so I'm curious to hear from three veterans that you are to this work. What are some of your tips? What are some of your recommendations? If you've got someone like me who understands what you're saying, but I could never figure out where to start at my school on creating this evaluation or a summary and then figuring out how to put that all together with the different initiatives and how to action plan for the year. What would you tell me where would you start? What am I doing? What graphs am I including? Who am I talking to? Who needs to be at my table? All of it. I want to hear. Go.
I think my head, this is where in my head, I always go.
Okay, I'm taking a note. Go.
All right. I go to the TFI because all the pieces are there.
Yes.
Those are all the implementation components that you need. So I just always have to go back to the TFI. This is where we start. This is exactly where we start. And, you know, do we have a representative team? What are our operating procedures? How are we conducting our meetings? Do we use meeting minutes? Are we using the TIPS process? All of those good pieces that are part of TFI, that's the starting place for me is TFI. Mm-hmm. I think those other components, such as the self-assessment, climate surveys, looking at your own triangle data, behavioral data, those are all important as well. But for someone that's just, we need to take it back to square one. Mm-hmm. For me, it's always the tiered fidelity inventory. Mm-hmm.
Diane, I love that. I did a session on the TFI at the Northwest PBIS conference recently. And one of the folks that came up to ask questions at the end was like what you were describing, Megan, like someone who was brand new, just at the conference for the first time. You could just tell it was like taking all the notes and like asked me that specifically, like, where do I start? Where else can I go? And I told her, start small, do the TFI, you know. And also sometimes the TFI, even if you're starting, you think at zero, like there's a chance there may be some things in place, like perhaps there is already a team and, oh, we're doing pretty good. We just need to add this, you know, person from this work group or classified person or, you know, so sometimes it can be good to like also pull out that there are things in place. Maybe there's data collection, but you're just not looking at it or things like that. So I'm always the positive Patty. I feel like
you got something,
which often it's not zero. Often there's something.
Yeah, there's something there. Level. You got something.
Some starting point.
Yeah.
Yeah. Kim, what do you think?
To partner on with that, I think it's also really important, but it's hard sometimes to be honest about where you're starting and be really honest about where you are. And it's okay to just be implementing. It's okay if something doesn't exist yet, but be honest. And then that's where the action planning piece starts. If we think we have something in place and we're doing it great, how do we know? If we don't have it in place, why do we think that? How do we know? And so like both of those pieces are really important, but being honest and not overinflating what's in place, because then you don't always see the room that you have to grow or to move in that direction. And so not being hard or harsh on yourself, but also being pretty honest and making the data tell you, how do we know what we know? And so then we can make decisions, and it's okay that we don't know everything. What are we going to do to try to know more? That honest conversation is hard because sometimes it feels, especially at the end of the year, when you're looking at things, it's hard time to look and go, oh, that's where we were. But you can go, oh, that's where we are. What are we going to do to move forward? But sometimes at the end of the year, that's a hard conversation.
Oh, yes. For sure.
Definitely.
For sure. Michelle?
I think both what Diane said and what Kim said are absolutely spot on. That's exactly when Diane said, start with TFI. That's exactly where my mind went. I think Kim, that piece about being super honest. I mean, part of that as district coaches, where you are is where you are, and that's okay. It's about moving forward. And I think that question about if we're not sure, what's the evidence? I think the other gap that, I'm hoping to fill in our next professional development is just to start get examples from schools about these are the, you know, the reinvented, the, what's the word I'm thinking of, the regenerated matrix for 2024, you know, getting some of those newer pieces, because if educators can see examples of what does it look like and sound like, that speeds up implementation like there's no tomorrow, because it's like, oh, I can do that. And it suddenly becomes manageable too. So I think, you know, with that evidence, that question is just so powerful, Kim, in terms of like, you know, it's how do we know? Because people want to, you know, they always want to get an A on their paper.
I know, I do.
So it's like, okay, it's okay. This tool isn't about that. It's about and that again goes back to understanding what is the TFI and how do you use it for long-term implementation and sustainability?
Yeah, I think that question right there is, one that we seem to come up against quite often, which is like taking these surveys is not some sort of like accolade or condemnation of what you have going on. It is merely an assessment mm-hmm. of what's happening. Mm-hmm. The same with referrals, as far as we are concerned, that if you're looking at behavior data, that is just a reflection of what's going on mm-hmm. in your school, good, bad, worse. Mm-hmm. There is no judgment. It mm-hmm. is just what is happening. And it's like you were saying, like being honest about the data that you have and understanding that this is just where we are. This is not a place to say, like, look at me, I got an A on my paper. This is like this is where we are and where are we going to go? And sometimes those lower evaluations can be like a little bit freeing because you have so many places you can start, mm-hmm. you know, that you get to pick.
Yeah.
You get to pick the one that feels good or the one that's going to stick with mm-hmm. more people in your school. You can mm-hmm. kind of choose to focus on one thing and start small. Yep. Like you were all saying, this is all really helpful. I appreciate, I appreciate having the years of knowledge in this space that you all share and the experience that you bring to this work. We're so privileged to be able to talk to the three of you and how you make this work with the schools that you support. So thanks so much for joining us in our little episode here today.
Really appreciate the time you took. I'm thinking of all the things you have on your to-do list and to carve out time to talk with us is just incredible. So thank special. You.
Yeah, thanks for having us. It was fun.
It was fun.
Yay, we love fun.
Jinx.